97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, good morning to you. Welcome in on this Thursday morning to the Mark Cox Morning Show. We are we've got a absolutely packed show for you today. And here alongside Kim St. Ange and Ethan Bright, we'll get Sue Thomas in just a minute with your traffic. But man, from the 6 o'clock hour on, we are going to be loaded down with information for you. So be sure and hang around for that. We're going to get Alan Dershowitz on, the lawyer and professor. So much going on overnight. Big day at the Supreme Court. Alan can comment on some of that. We got Jim Talent, Giano Caldwell, who's of course a commentator and contributor on Fox News. Shannon Bream. We're going to get Beavis Shock in here talking about this quo warranto effort by Attorney General Andrew Bailey to get the St. Louis Sheriff out of office. So we've really got a lot going on this morning. Kim, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
Yeah, I'm looking at the rundown right now, and you're right. We really do have a packed show, but it's good stuff. And it's every day. It's just you're dumbfounded by how many things go on, and it's just you never run out of different topics to discuss.
Boy, that's the truth. Here you go, Ethan. Let me give you the short list here. I, as usual, was at my desk slaving away till the very last second and came running in the studio when Ethan says, Mark! Because the music is playing at the intro to my own show, and I have to run in here and be ready to roll. So, just part of what we do, what we put on the line for you every single day here. That's good. You know, Kim, I'm going to start early this morning, and I'm going to mention this several times today. I just have to tell you, I'm going to mention this several times today, and it's very self-serving, but I'm going to say it anyway. I need help from my people. My people are my listeners. I need mechanical help. And I don't know who else to turn to. I have reached a dead end in my efforts to fix my jet ski, which is an older model that I bought a few years ago. And I can't get it to start. But because it's 20 plus years old, I don't want to invest a lot of money in it because I know if I take it to one of these regular marina shops, it's going to cost me $150 an hour in labor and all this stuff. It's a very simple problem. It just won't start. It turns over, it just won't start. So here's my ask for you today. If you know somebody who works on older jet skis, maybe in their part-time, or they do it in their backyard, or they're really good at it, email me. Here's what I don't want. I don't want suggestions on how I could fix it, because I have reached the limits of my mechanical abilities dealing with this SOB so far, and I'm tired of it. I want to find someone who can make my jet ski start. So if you have a name for me, Joe's Backyard Mechanics, email me down here, mark.cox at odyssey.com, marc.cox at odyssey.com, or put it on the Facebook page today, and I'm going to reach out to that person. I don't know what else to do.
I'll be curious to see if you actually get somebody.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to get a million pieces of advice on what else I could try to do to fix it. I've tried everything. I've replaced things in it, the regulator. I've replaced all this different stuff in the starter box. I can't get to start. So now what I need is a mechanic. So if you know one, let me know today. I'm at my wit's end on this thing, and I don't quite know where to go next. All right, that's it for the self-serving part of the show. Let's get on to some content here. Ethan, let's get to our top stories.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
The DIA themselves have now come out and said this was a preliminary report and this CNN story got it completely wrong. But that reporter is a sheep and she's a mouthpiece for people who don't like Donald Trump.
Yeah, the one that kind of led the lies on the Steele dossier is now claiming we didn't destroy anything in Iran. Anyway, Pete Hegseth is going to hold a news conference this morning about 7 a.m. St. Louis time, and we're going to have all the details on that for you right here.
They want to spin it to try to make him look bad based on a leak. Of course, we've all seen plenty of leakers. And what do leakers do? They have agendas. And what do? Do they share the whole information or just the part that they want to introduce?
Yeah, that's true. You got somebody leaking something They have an agenda. There's no doubt about that. And we'll find out more this morning at 7 when the defense secretary takes to the airwaves.
I wish I could yield back the last 5 minutes of my life, actually. And I want to apologize to the people of Arizona that we have somebody who's representing the folks in one of our great parts of the valley that doesn't care about the integrity of our election. So
Carrie Lake, Carrie Lake gutted a fish yesterday in Congress. I don't know how else to put it. This congressman challenged her and called her a liar. And she let go one of his deepest secrets in front of Congress, and he was speechless.
I wanted to know how he's doing. He was very nice, actually. You know, we had little rough times sometimes. He was couldn't have been nicer. I think he'd like to see an end to this. I do.
That's President Trump. Of course, he's been in the Netherlands. He's been at this NATO summit. He's been owning these members of NATO because he got them to finally agree. Now, they all have to go back and get their respective governments to agree to it, but they have tentatively agreed to increase their spending. And while he was there, he met with Volodymyr Zelensky, who somewhere between Kyiv and this meeting in the Netherlands stopped by a men's store and bought a suit. It was pretty amazing. I don't know where he went. Maybe he went to Sears and bought one. I couldn't tell what it looked like, but he did have a suit on for the first time ever. And wow. I don't know if it was to impress Trump because he got criticized for not wearing, because all he ever wears is that stupid track suit when he goes places. I mean, come on.
So did Zelensky call him daddy too?
I don't know. That was pretty funny, though, wasn't it?
Oh, the funniest part, too, is seeing Marco Rubio react when the journalist from Sky News asked him about, you know, she has her little accent. She's like, what do you think about being called daddy? Do you view them, the NATO members, as your children? And Trump's trying to keep a straight face, and Marco Rubio's just losing it right behind him. Yeah. How can you not? Daddy? The head of NATO calling him daddy.
This is the thing you have to pause for a moment and just enjoy this. I mean, watching these largely left wing, mostly very, with the exception of the Italian prime minister and maybe the Lithuanian prime minister, mostly left wing progressive leaders in Europe, all kneel at the feet of Donald Trump, who they have badmouthed for years, who they celebrated when he left office in 2020 and loved having Joe Biden there, who they could walk all over, even direct him around at news conferences because he didn't know where the hell he was most of the time. And now they just want to be part of his world. You heard the guy yesterday, we should make NATO great again, right? They don't know what to do. You just need to savor this for a moment because this is what we told you needed to happen. How long has it been? Raise your hand if you can answer this. How long has it been since we've had a leader in the White House who demanded the respect of European leaders? How long? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I know a lot of them got along with George H.W. Bush. I don't think a whole lot of them respected George W. Bush. It's certainly what they loved Barack Obama because he was one of them. When he went on the apology tour after he got elected and blasted America all over the world and apologized for America's strength, it was embarrassing. You got nothing better out of Joe Biden. It just got progressively worse. And now we're back on top. Now you have a strong Central American leader. And as usual, the world is falling behind them because you need that. When you're the superpower of the world, when you're the gorilla, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and you're the good guy, the United States is the good guy, you have to flex every once in a while. You do. Nobody over there has got better ideas than we do. Nobody else has got a better economy than we do, a stronger economy, a stronger military. The United States needs to be in a position of leadership. And for too long, American leaders have allowed, particularly from the European standpoint, the European Union, to walk all over us. NATO, all these crazy green peace accords all over the world, basically transferring wealth to third world nations. All of that's over now. And, you know, happy next 4 years, because I love that picture of the that screaming professor for the University of Missouri who's in every meme now with her mouth wide open, screaming up at the sky. And you put her on a time chart, 2025 to 2028. She's right up against 2025. You are here. You have 4 more years of this to look forward to. And I love that. Just put this in perspective and take a moment to appreciate. All right, Kim, I told you this was going to happen. I've requested some help for my jet ski, and it didn't take long for what to happen that I expected to happen.
My friend
Brad said you need to replace the framister and realign the fibrillator.
Oh, yeah, the fibrillator. Yeah, that was what I was going to say. When you were telling me about it, that was my first guess.
If I had just thought of that.
Replace the wiggle womp and the zigzag.
I think it's the flux capacitor.
I actually found a company that sells jet ski parts somewhere down in near Hillsboro. And I ordered something through eBay from them. And we're convinced, my buddy and I, who does have some mechanical ability, after testing it and testing the ohms and all that, that's what the problem was, and it still won't start. So I've spent $35 on it right now. I'm that deep in, maybe a few more dollars if you count the new spark plugs. But beyond that, I can't figure out why this thing won't start. So if you know somebody who's a shade tree mechanic who can fix two-cycle jet skis, Yamaha 750 or Kawasaki 750, let me know. And I'm open to suggestions right now. Feel free to email me or comment on the Facebook page this morning and kind of give me a little bit of help. Did you see any of the testimony in Congress yesterday? We always can depend on our friend John Kennedy. They were having a debate over public broadcasting. This is the one where you had Carrie Lake in there commenting on why we need to defund PBS, and specifically she was talking about the Voice of America. That's one of the things you're trying to trim as well, which, you know, sounds all patriotic, and we broadcast the Voice of America around the world. And then we find out there are not only zero limits on it, even congressmen have no control over what goes out over the VOA. They can spread lies, they can spread anything they want, and nobody can question them. And now Trump and Carrie Lake are saying it's time to defund this. This was our friend John Kennedy yesterday during this hearing asking a pretty simple question.
Do we give money to Fox?
No.
Do we give money to Politico?
No.
Then why are we giving money to public broadcasting? Why? We're $36 trillion in the hole.
Why? Why are we giving money to public broadcasting?
He makes a good point.
He does make a good point. If it's commercial, see, that's the point. They know, the people that support public broadcasting know it's not commercially viable. Or they're afraid to experiment and find out if it's commercially viable. They are. Air America failed in this country for a reason. Not because of mismanagement, right? It failed because they put every screaming lib, Rachel Maddow, all these crazies on their radio station, and they syndicated it, and they thought it would be a big hit, and it failed miserably. They didn't get the financial support they needed to support that network. Why is that? It's really simple. I've talked about it on here before. It's because you don't need a liberal radio talk show, because you can just watch the mainstream media. They're the mouthpiece for the left in this country. They are. The reason Rush Limbaugh burst onto the scene in the 80s and was such a roaring success was you weren't hearing those common sense views on what was going on in the world anywhere else. And of course, they all labeled him as some sort of, you know, hard right winger and blah, 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 blah. The problem was he was right all along. He wasn't hard right. He was right all along. And that was a that hit home with millions of Americans who like, wait a minute, this what this guy's saying makes perfect sense to me. I see these things with my own eyes, and the media tells me that it's not what I think it is. But it was, and it is, and Rush Limbaugh called out the whole identity politics thing long before anybody recognized it. He's like, this is what the left is trying to do. And we need to stop it now. And of course, it's all out of control. Got completely out of whack over the whole thing. So I'll get to more of this Carrie Lake stuff coming up because she eviscerated a Arizona congressman yesterday in front of everyone, and he was gap jawed when it happened. We'll get to Kim on a whim coming up. Stay tuned.
We're about to launch one of the biggest advertising campaigns in HHS history. To encourage Americans to use wearables. It's a way of people can take control over their own health. They can take responsibility. They can see, as you know, what food is doing to their glucose levels, their heart rates, and a number of other metrics as they eat it. And they can begin to make good judgments about their diet, about their physical activity, about the way that they live their lives. We think that wearables are a key to the MAHA agenda, making America healthy again. And we are going to, my vision is that every American is wearing a wearable within 4 years.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea what RFK Jr. there is suggesting, which is to have every American within 4 years wearing one of those wearable devices. So whether it be a smartwatch, a fitness tracker like the Apple Watches, or they're called what, the Aura Rings or something like that. I know those are really popular. They would essentially monitor your heart rate, your blood pressure, your glucose levels. I see value in that. I think it's going to be a hard sell. In fact, there's many people online who are saying, you know, I tried wearing one of those little fitness trackers on my wrist and it ended up leading to some sort of a rash. And they became very, very addicted to kind of like a cell phone with social media where you realize you're checking it nonstop. And people said it was so addicting that they actually didn't want it anymore.
Hell no.
The other thing people are saying is I'm worried this will allow them to track me. Yeah, I don't think it's going to track
Americans
people.
Are not going to do that. You can make your best recommendation. You know what? If it's the government's recommendation that you don't smoke, there you have it. The people that are going to keep smoking are going to keep smoking. If it's the government's recommendation that you get a fitness tracker of some sort, it doesn't have to. It can be a Garmin. It doesn't have to be a, you know, an Apple Watch that's $400 or $500. Then, if that's what you want to do, do it. RFK is not going to be able to force every American to wear one of those things.
But I don't think he's forcing everybody because that would be ridiculous.
Didn't he say that was his goal?
That's his goal. But there's no way he's going to say, "All right, line up. You have to be here by this time and this date." I'm going to glue this watch to your wrist. You cannot take it off. There's no way that would ever stand.
No.
But just to make the suggestion of, hey, this would be a really good idea. I think it's the idea that. It's the notion that this is something we probably should care more about than we do right now because we've had such a sharp increase in chronic diseases. And it's not just among the older populations. It's among kids. Kids at a very young age are developing these chronic issues. And it's causing more problems as they become adults. And it's very, very expensive.
Right.
And we already spend so much money, astronomical amounts of money, in the health industry, and yet we're so, so sick as a nation.
Well, he's on the right track. I like a lot of what he's doing. I mean, I think that you can get a little overboard with it when it comes to tracking people's health. Some of those things are beneficial. I mean, I know a lot of people who are always focused on how many steps they've done today. I'm worried about how many steps I've made from here to the coffee maker in the morning. That's about it. I need to be more aware of those things. It doesn't hurt to talk about them. There are important issues that they're dealing with up there. For example, let me see if I got my audio turned off here. Here we go. This is what RFK said yesterday during this hearing. And these are the kinds of things that people need to pay attention to.
The United States remains the sickest developed nation, and yet we spend $4.5 trillion annually on health care, 2 to 3 times more per capita to comparable nations. Clearly, something is structurally wrong with our approach. Furthermore, health care costs are steadily increasing at a rate of 2% greater than the economy. This is unsustainable.
He's right. Think about that. It's like the argument we got into the other day with some of the people on the Facebook page about education spending. The city of St. Louis spends double what a lot of districts do, and their results suck. It's not about how much money you spend on it. It's about how you carry it out, right? It's about what your policies are and what your curriculum is. And say, it's the same with the approach on healthcare.
Well, I think a lot of it is because we're so over-medicated. In many cases, you have to take medication. There's just no way around it. You need to have something to at least serve as a crutch temporarily. In some cases, there might be a particular disease you deal with where you just unfortunately will have to remain on medication the rest of your life, which I 100% would support. However, I think the bigger issue is that we're not getting to the root cause of many of these chronic issues. We're not addressing food that we're taking in. We're not addressing the chemicals that we're exposed to. And I'm not pretending like I'm so great at watching every single thing that I eat. I've been more particular about it recently, but I still wish I were better at saying, okay, I need to read every single ingredient and all the things, but it gets kind of overwhelming for me.
Sure.
It's very time consuming. It's very expensive. And I know that they're making changes. A lot of these companies are taking the food dyes out, like Kraft, or I think it was, or Heinz. I can't even keep track.
Heinz.
Many of these companies are agreeing to do it. Now they are being forced technically to at least remove some of the dyes, I believe by 2027, but many of them are just saying, hey, I'll just go ahead and remove all of the dyes because likely they'll be forced to at some point, depending on, I guess, who's in office after Trump.
We talked about this the other day, and then I had a conversation with somebody who just got back from Europe, and it was an extended vacation, right? Like 3 weeks. This was like the big trip. And the conversation was, when I left here, my allergies were like killing me. I was on a daily allergy pill. Went to Europe for 3 weeks and my symptoms disappeared. Now, it could be that you're here and there's an environmental issue for you here, yard clippings or something, and they don't have some of that same problem wherever you were in France, that same type of pine or whatever that's affecting your allergies. Or it could be that they just do things differently with the food system over there, and that's what caused some of her symptoms to go away. And I think that's something they have to take a hard look at, and it seems to me that RFK Jr. is doing that.
Right, and I think there's some pushback from the medical community because that means if people get healthier, they might not need as many drugs.
Boom.
And that's how they make, not all, but a lot of their money. So you have to, I always say, follow the money. You know, there are some people who have bad intentions when it comes to health as far as they need you to stay sick. This is certainly not all doctors. There's phenomenal doctors out there. We need doctors. We need medication. We need a lot of these things. But we have been so overprescribed medicine and people are so addicted. You have people who have surgeries, have never been addicted to a drug before. They're prescribed an opioid to help with pain relief that is needed in that particular situation because they're in extraordinary pain as they recover. Well, then here you have somebody who is addicted, right? And then they're selling and it just kind of spirals from there. So I really think that at least we have the right, I believe, leader in place. RFK Jr., I believe, is 100% the right person in that position. And he's going to keep trying to get the ball rolling in a better direction than it has been. Because we've been going downhill for many, 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 many years.
It's true. And when they talked about a ban on pharmaceutical ads.
Oh, see, I would love that.
It sent a shiver through commercial broadcasting because it would be no different than it would be for this radio station because you'll hear ads on here occasionally for certain drugs. Hell, they were advertising for the COVID vaccine for a while.
Oh, yeah.
These big companies, because, you know, it's a commercial radio station And if they come knocking on the door with a bunch of money, just like any politician, whether we agree with them or not, if they've got enough money to buy the ad time, they can run an ad on a commercial radio station or a commercial TV station. They were talking about limiting the kind of ads pharmaceutical companies could air. So you're not seeing that that one ad for I don't know what it is for people that are overweight. That's where they're dancing down the street. I've seen that ad over and over and over again. It would eliminate those.
And it sounds crazy to us because we're so used to hearing on the radio or seeing on TV so many of these ads.
Right.
But it's really not that crazy considering we're one of the only countries. In fact, I think we're one of two countries in the world that allows these types of advertisements. Many of these companies or countries, rather, they ban it. They're not allowed to do that.
There's a much broader issue here, and I heard RFK bring it up the other day, and that is this issue of controlling drug prices. And I have a little bit of an issue with it. I just have to say, whatever the problem, whatever the reasons are that drugs are cheaper in Europe, is partially political and partially the fault of the pharmaceutical companies forever agreeing to it, because they could subsidize the cost of drugs overseas because they could pretty much charge whatever they wanted in the United States, or they could charge the full cost of the drug in the United States for the R&D and all of that. And therefore, to get into these foreign markets, they were willing to sell the drugs at a cheaper price. And now you've got the president and RFK saying, well, we're going to do most favored nation status, and we're going to force them to sell it here for the same price they sell it there. Well, that's not going to work. It's not going to work in a capitalist society. They can't keep producing the best drugs in the world if they can't afford to do the R&D on them. So at some point, there's got to be a compromise there. You can't just say that drug is $70 a month in Israel and it's $7,000 a month in the U.S. and you're going to have to match the $70 a month that Israel is getting. That's not going to work. The costs are going to have to go up overseas, or those people aren't going to be able to afford the drugs.
Well, that's the problem here,
and they can't cut them to $70 here because they wouldn't be able to afford the R&D it took to produce them.
I get your point, and I agree to an extent, and I just don't know what the solution is, because I don't know that it's to force them to lower them here, but at some point, people can't even afford the drug.
No,
like, you're making all of these things, but then if people can't afford to even get it and use it, what good does it do?
Well,
so
again,
that's the only, I don't know what the solution is, and I don't make the big money to
want
be
big
in that
government.
Position to solve that problem.
I'm not sure I want big government making those decisions at the end of the day, but we'll talk more about that. A quick break here. Kim, did you feel a sense of pride as you drove into work this morning?
I had to think about that for a second. As I was having to constantly reroute to make sure I could get to the office, I felt a lack of pride. Yeah,
I understand that, because much of downtown is blocked off right now due to the Pride festivities that are taking place this weekend. And meanwhile, an amazing thing happened yesterday with some Atlanta teens facing charges for hate crimes, for something they did. We're going to talk about that coming up here in just a minute. Stay tuned. So they're having Pride Fest this weekend in downtown St. Louis. The area around our radio station is currently blocked off. Like, all of the streets from 12th Street down here to the west, all the way up to the soccer stadium, are blocked off. Like the streets between Olive and Market Street, all the side streets are blocked off with the blockades this morning, because they're getting ready to bring in the tents and everything else they're going to do for Pride Fest. And okay, that's fine. Everybody has their, if it was just one weekend, I guess it wouldn't bother me so much as the fact that we have a month set aside in this country to celebrate LGBTQ XYZ LMNOP stuff, but we have to take one day, maybe one day, to celebrate presidents like George Washington or Abraham
veterans.
Lincoln. Or veterans.
Or veterans.
Or
moms
all of
or
this
dads.
Other. One day, but for Pride, we get a home. Okay, whatever. If you're feeling that bad about yourself, take your month. Whatever. I'm just glad I won't be in town this weekend for that mess. But that's okay. I will not have to deal with it if you choose to subject yourself to that. Good luck to you. This is what sticks in my craw. We had a conversation on this show the other day, Kim, about whether or not, I think it was it Josh Hawley who introduced the bill to ban the burning of the American flag.
He wants to criminalize it, and they actually think you should be, I guess, was it 1 year in prison they think you should be potentially having to serve if you burn an American flag?
I think there was a prison term associated with it. And a lot of people screamed, free speech, we should be able to burn the American flag if we want. So, you know, it pisses me off when I see people in L.A. who don't want to go back to Mexico waving American flags around while they burn the American flag, protesting the fact that criminal investigators of ICE are rounding up some of their illegal counterparts and trying to send them back to Mexico. Now, they seem to like Mexico because they're waving the American flag, or the Mexican flag. They're burning the American flag. I want to throat punch those people. Do you understand that? It offends me to watch that. I also understand they have a First Amendment right to express their opinion. And until they get violent with me, okay, we can have that debate about whether that's okay or not. But what happened in Atlanta right now really, really, really goes over the line. Here's what you need to know. Some Atlanta teens, ages 16 to 18, are now... The hunt is on. There's a manhunt underway for them, facing hate crime charges and prison time because they, wait for it, vandalized a pride flag in Atlanta, Georgia. The Atlanta Police Department is looking for two other teenagers. Apparently, they found two of them. They're looking for two more because they tore up LGBTQ flags in Atlanta, Georgia. And instead of just charging them with vandalism, remember in the state of Missouri now, apparently you can vandalize somebody's car with hateful stickers because you don't like the guy that built the car and you might get your wrist slapped. You won't even get a vandalism charge. In Kirkwood, all they got was harassment or something like that. In Atlanta, they're looking at hate crime charges against the people who burned the pride flag in Midtown with a hate crime. And I don't even know if they burned it. They just tore them up.
They were ripping it up.
Right? They ripped them down. There were videos and photos of them cutting up the flags with a knife.
The hate crime charge is really ridiculous because here's what I've said about American flags. I disagree with Hawley. I don't think you should have to face jail time for burning the American flag. As much as I hate it, I do think it is freedom of speech, but you should also be able to burn a pride flag and it should
you.
Be covered. Now,
should that be freedom
only,
of speech? Why is that a hate crime?
The only difference is if, say, a business has an American flag, you rip that down, or a business has a pride flag and you rip that down. That, I see, is vandalism because it's somebody's property.
Well,
you're
but charge
them
with vandalism.
Right. That's why I'm saying the hate crime goes way too far in this case.
You can burn the American flag in the streets of L.A. during an anti-ICE protest and nothing happens to you. And you can just about murder somebody here. I mean, it's just crazy. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay tuned. All right. Good morning to you. Happy you're here. It's a Thursday morning, the 26th day of June. It's going to be a heater out there again this morning. And we will, of course, keep you up to date on all of that as it goes along, the traffic and everything else. Kim St. Ajin here with me this morning. And, of course, Ethan is running the board over there, doing a great job. We got Sue Thomas before too long. And we're going to get to all of it. We got a big show for you. Coming up, we're going to talk to our friend Beavis Shock, of course, attorney with Shock Law, shocklaw.com, because the biggest shock this week, if I can make a play on his last name, is that the attorney general has told the sheriff of St. Louis to get out of town. The sheriff says he's not going anywhere. Yesterday, he filed legal paperwork to remove him from office. It's called quo warranto. And if you didn't go to law school like me, we're going to let a legal expert like Beavis explain what that is. They tried to do it with Kim Gardner. Remember, they threatened this with her, too. So we'll check in with Beavis coming up here in the next segment. Tom Ackerman at the bottom of the hour. Find out about that big home run derby the Cardinals had the other day and how their prospects are looking at the moment. So stay tuned for that. Also, next hour, I don't know what to expect. We're supposed to have a news conference starting in about an hour from Pete Hegseth and Department of Defense officials explaining what evidence they have about the bombing in Iran, what the impact was, no pun intended, what we really destroyed, what we didn't destroy. That's supposed to happen at 7. You know those things don't always happen on time. We had already scheduled Alan Dershowitz in that time slot, the attorney who you see on Fox all the time, to talk about some of the big issues that are going on with the Supreme Court. This is the end of the Supreme Court session this week. So today and tomorrow are when they're going to unleash a flood of major decisions, including the ones on whether or not all these local district court judges can step in and stop with injunctions the president of the United States just because their politics don't agree with him. That's what it seems like in most of these cases. So we will be sure and check in with Alan on that when we get him on the air. We've got Jim Talent scheduled next hour as well. Shannon Bream a little bit later. I mean, we have got a fantastic and very full show for you this morning. There's no doubt about that. So we're going to get to all of that for you coming up here in just a few minutes. And right now, Ethan, why don't we go ahead and get to our short list, please?
The Mark Cox Short List.
Let him fight for about 2-3 minutes, then it's easier to stop him.
And then Daddy has to sometimes use strong language.
You have to use strong language. Every once in a while, you have to use a certain word.
There's President Trump, of course. He's talking about what's going on there with Zelensky, and you've got Benjamin Netanyahu. They're trying to throw him out of office over there, throw him in jail or something, and been one of the greatest leaders in the history of Israel. What in the world is going on?
I wanted to know how he's doing. He was very nice, actually. You know, we had little rough times sometimes. He was couldn't have been nicer. I think he'd like to see an end to this. I do.
And he wore a suit. He's talking about Volodymyr Zelensky, who showed up in the Netherlands wearing a suit. Because when you need more money, you need to suck up to the people who have it. And he's hoping for more U.S. support, no doubt.
I wish I could yield back the last 5 minutes of my life, actually. And I want to apologize to the people of Arizona that we have somebody who's representing the folks in one of our great parts of the valley that doesn't care about the integrity of our election. So I...
Carrie Lake. Carrie Lake went sideways on a U.S. congressman yesterday, but in that sort of sweet way that Carrie Lake does. The guy was speechless. That doesn't happen very often in Congress. I'll try to play that for you here coming up in just a minute.
For weeks, my office has received reports of misconduct, malfeasance, and unethical behavior regarding the St. Louis City Sheriff. This is about restoring the rule of law. Each count is significant enough to warrant removal from office.
Yeah, that's the Attorney General there, and Andrew Bailey yesterday talking about why he filed what he did against the sheriff, Sheriff Montgomery. And we'll be watching that story today closely and getting our friend Beavis Shock to comment on it coming up here in just a few minutes. Let me get back to this Carrie Lake story. So Carrie Lake is the one trying to help wind down, among other things, the voice of America. VOA has a long and rich history in America. It was a voice of freedom to a lot of people in the Soviet Union and other countries, socialist countries, Cuba, places like that, for a long time. Somewhere it got off track, and there are certain rules to the Voice of America, Kim, and I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but. For example, it cannot broadcast within the continental United States, even though the broadcast originates in the continental United States. It's somewhere along the line, Congress lost control of what happens with the Voice of America. And it's many people agree, like Carrie Lake and the President of the United States, it's no longer serving the purpose it was originally designed for, and it costs a lot of money to support. And as you're looking to streamline government, this is one of the areas you're looking at. So Lake was brought in to testify at this hearing on DOGE cuts. A part of them would affect PBS and all of that stuff, but specifically on The Voice of America. And there was a congressman there from Arizona, it's a Democrat, who doesn't like Carrie Lake because Carrie Lake ran for governor out there and lost, and she had issues with how the election went. She's been very loud. She's been in court. She claims that it was mishandled. Polls were shut down. People were still trying to vote in heavy Republican areas. Those votes were never counted. She claims that she won that race. She sticks to it to this day. And the guy was blasting her for that. Go to cut nine, please.
I wish I could yield back the last 5 minutes of my life, actually. And I want to apologize to the people of Arizona that we have somebody who's representing the folks in one of our great parts of the valley that doesn't care about the integrity of our election. So
Yeah, he referred to Carrie Lake as toxic. This Representative Stanton is his name out of Arizona. And then she said, I'd rather refocus on why we're here, Congressman, which is to talk about the VOA. And then she just gutted him like a fish. Go to cut 10 for us, Ethan, please.
We're talking about USAGM today, the Agency for Global Media, and how they can put out absolute abject lies. And we can't control any. We have no say over what the editorial content is. And I would hope that you would not be okay with that. They could literally put out a lie about anybody here. And I know you've been the victim of that. I know you've been the victim. I remember the stories about you where they said you had a gay lover, and those were going on.
Mr. Chairman, I hope you honor what you just gave as a caution to everyone, and I moved those words.
To tell you that those kind of lies, and you said those were lies, those kind of lies could be broadcast today on VOA, and you couldn't pick up the phone, Representative Stanton, and call them and say, hey, you're putting out lies about me. You would not be able to do that because they would sue you for breaking the firewall. So lies are being told on Voice of America. It's inappropriate. You've been subjected to lies that you said were lies about you in the media before. And how would you like it if those lies were put on Voice of America right now?
Wow. Wow. The guy wasn't the one protesting. It was another congressman sitting behind him trying to get her to shut up about what she was saying about the stories that were apparently reported about, because she was an anchor in Arizona. Mm-hmm. She remembers when these stories came out. And that's the last thing that guy wanted to talk about in that hearing yesterday.
It really is mind-blowing that the federal government is still supporting these different public media groups. I don't get it.
And we wouldn't even know about it if it wasn't for a change in government here. I mean, this story would just be covered up. All right, quick break here. We'll get to our friend Beavis Shock and what's going on with the Attorney General and the Sheriff of St. Louis. Stay tuned.
Attorney General Andrew Bailey gave Sheriff Alfred Montgomery until noon today to quit. The sheriff said he was standing firm, saying he's done nothing wrong. And when that deadline came and went, Bailey followed through with his ousting effort.
Yeah. Yes, he did. You heard the bite earlier from the attorney general. In fact, we had him on yesterday. He's been all over the media. I think Reardon had him on yesterday afternoon, where he was in studio, I'll point out, to Kim St. Ange. He wouldn't get up and come in early for us. I gave him some grief about that yesterday. But in the meantime, we're dealing with the fact that the sheriff says he's not going anywhere, and the effort has now been filed in court. My friend Beavis Shock from Shock Law is on the phone with us this morning to explain to us what the Latin term quo warranto really means. Beavis, what do you think?
Well, so I did take Latin in high school, and I was very good at it because I didn't have to do anything but memorize a bunch of weird words, and a lot of the words are similar to modern words. Quo means the question, what? What does it mean? Quo. Quo warranto means by what warrant or authority. So imagine you're in the Middle Ages and some king is the boss in England and you're the local sheriff and you kind of start getting out of line. You start locking up people that shouldn't be locked up. You're stealing from your population. The king comes in and says, by what authority are you doing this? Quo warranto, meaning kind of the word authority. What are you doing this? And so the sheriff would have to come to I guess a court that had then, and say, well, my authority as sheriff includes stealing from the people. And he'd say, no, he doesn't. No, it doesn't. You're out. And off he would go. and that'd be the end of that. So that's the source. Now, we should really upgrade some of these terms. But on the other hand, they make it seem, have lawyers feel mysterious and above other people. So Latin is always good. Hi, Kim. Hi.
Hey, good morning.
Yeah,
good. I like this explanation because I didn't know. You know, you hear these fancy words and it's like right over your head. What does that even mean, you know, officially? But that explains it, because that's the question, too, is, and that was kind of what I was asking Bailey yesterday, was like, do you actually have the power, because he was elected, Montgomery, do you have the power to just remove him, basically, and what that process would even look like? How complicated is that?
Yeah, so here's what I think is going to happen. So he does have the authority. There's a statute, which is a law passed by the legislature, and there's also what we call in the legal game a rule. So the Missouri Supreme Court establishes rules of the game, like on a tennis match or basketball court. Here's the way we play. And the rules allow for an action like this against an elected official. Now, I'm not going to explain why, but some officials you can impeach, and some you get rid of by quo warranto. This is a quo warranto. So I think the attorney general has the guy pretty tight. But the first thing that's going to happen is that all the judges in St. Louis City are going to say, I'm not handling this, and that's called a recusal. Because the guy who's managing the courtroom, his courtroom security, works for the defendant. So they're all going to say, we're out. And that will take a week. Then the Missouri Supreme Court has to appoint somebody new. Now, I talked to a judge yesterday, a retired judge. He said, yeah, they do that pretty fast, Beavis. That's usually 2 or 3 days. So let's give them that. So they'll appoint somebody to come in from Rolla or Kansas City or something, some judge who's a properly appointed, duly sitting, proper judge, just not from St. Louis City. And they're not going to do somebody from St. Louis County either. That wouldn't make any sense. And then that person will come in, and then we have a thing in the law, a rule, which allows any party to say, I don't like that judge. I want a new judge. And that's
challenge.
Called a change of judge. You get one count, one shot at that. So by the way, the sheriff, Montgomery, has hired an ex-judge named Mason, Judge Mason, who is one of the most distinguished members of the bar, was a really popular judge. Everybody liked Judge Mason. Everybody thought he was very competent, seldom reversed by the Court of Appeals, tried a million cases, knows what he's doing. So Montgomery's hired a really good lawyer. He's going to ask for what's called a change of judge, and that will add another 2 or 3 weeks to the process. And Andrew Bailey won't do that, but because that would apply, he doesn't trust the judges, which would be bad. And then we'll get at the merits finally, maybe in late July. That's my prediction. And the trial's going to take a while, right? I mean, you got to prove all this stuff.
So Sheriff Montgomery, and what you're telling us, is going to get to enjoy that brand new SUV he bought, despite the fact that the department has no money
for
quite a while. Yeah,
I think that's the deal to cut. So, hey, man, here's what we do. We give you 3 months pay. You keep the Tahoe. Get out of our hair.
Yeah, that could happen. Absolutely.
That's why he bought it.
$52,000. And they're in a budget
cheap. That's
deficit.
That's a deal. What if he got that from Don Brown? I don't know.
Hey, but a bunch.
Listen, and did he negotiate him down? I mean, my wife and I buy cars once in a while, and I say, hey, honey, shut up. I'm a genius. I'll get a deal for us, which then completely fails. The guy says, I'm not cutting you a deal, Beavis.
Yeah, of course. Beavis Shock, listen, we appreciate your time, my friend. Thanks for the explanation.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for the Latin lesson.
I feel
this
smarter.
Quo warranto.
After learning that.
I do know that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Under what authority?
Under what authority?
Are you telling me to do that? So
I'll just use that casually when I'm talking to people.
You
just
should.
To sound fancy.
You should. That'll impress them. And that then is. They'll have to stop and ask you, what does that mean? And then you can impress them
authority?
With your knowledge. Granted to us, given to us by Beavis Shock. Shocklaw.com. You can check him out there. Tom Ackerman will be in here, and under his authority as a sports director, will explain to us exactly how the Cardinals are doing right now, and maybe more about that City game that took place yesterday. We'll be back in just a minute. All right, Tom Ackerman in here drinking coffee as we introduce him, because we all need caffeine at this hour.
Yeah, you know, we're covering sports. We got baseball late at night. Things happen. You got to the Cardinals got to get rid of that one quickly. You got a day game today. You got to get over it and get after it, because the momentum was so good coming into the game yesterday. Guys were talking about how they just can't wait to get to the ballpark, can't wait to hit. And the Cubs came in first pitch that Eric Fetty threw last night. Ian Happ hit it out of the ballpark, and you just knew that it was going to be trouble. Fetty just did not have it last night. He was throwing balls down the middle of the plate, and the Cubs were hitting him. He just had a really off night, and the Cardinals couldn't respond, couldn't score. It was just a bad night for him. So they lose 8-0, and today they play Shota Imanaga. He's good. He's the Cubs' ace. He hasn't pitched in 6 weeks. He's been out with a hamstring injury, almost 7 weeks now for him. So they'll counter with Andre Pallante, and he was very good in his last start against the Reds. And the Cardinals are really good ball club. I mean, they're in the race right now. They just had a rough night after beating the Cubs twice. And the Cardinals' offense has been very tough. I mean, over this run, they've averaged about 7 runs a game. Now that's going to be about 6.5 after getting blanked last night.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But a really good team, man. The Cubs are, and the Cardinals are, and the Brewers are, and the Reds are right there, too. It's a 4-team race right now in the NL Central. Here's how it stacks up. The Cubs, then the Brewers are 2.5 out. Cardinals 3.5 out. Reds 5.5 out.
The Cubs are in the lead.
Have been all season, pretty
man,
much.
That's an uncomfortable situation.
Well, I mean, it is what it is.
I feel
man.
More comfortable, though, that they beat them the first two games. Like you said, I'm looking at it like, wow, I can't believe we beat them because I knew they were number one in the NL Central. So at least we're not getting blown away. At least it's not a sweep so far where this is, well, at least an opportunity today to sweep us.
The first two games were really fun. Yeah. The Cardinals smoked them in the first game. It was just not even a contest, 8-2. The second game, the Cardinals were up. Actually down 5-2, came back, tied the game, zapped a home run, did Nolan Gorman. And then the play of the game was Pecro Armstrong, the excellent center fielder for the Cubs, just had a lapse for whatever reason. He forgot how many outs there were. So Mason Wynn is standing at second base, and Alec Burleson hits a deep fly ball to center. And Crow Armstrong goes up, makes the catch, and then just kind of casually twirls around like the inning's over.
Oh, well, no.
Wynn just keeps on running. And Pop Warner waves him home. That's a sac fly RBI from second base that gave the Cardinals an 8-5 lead, and they won it 8-7. It ended up being the winning run. So that was a rough one. I'm sure the Cubs showed up yesterday focused and ready to go after getting embarrassed in those first two games. They don't. Obviously, like losing in St. Louis, losing to the Cardinals, losing it all. But this is a good rivalry, and, you know, they're showing some pride. Now the Cardinals need to come back today on a hot afternoon at Busch Stadium and try to capture 3 of 4, get themselves back to where they wanted to be. They go to Cleveland this weekend, and coming up July 4th, they'll go to Wrigley Field, and they'll play the Cubs for 3. It's really been a fun time, I think, these two going at it. I'm hearing we're going to have a really good crowd today. For whatever reason, the tickets sold like hotcakes for this thing. So we'll see who ends up showing up on a really hot day. But I'm hearing the ticket sales were very high for this afternoon's game.
That's good. Yeah. I would be voted least likely to look at the baseball standings. So that's where my next question comes from. On the other side, have the White Sox gotten any sort of a bump out of Pope Leo? Like, has that helped them
at all?
Actually,
a little bit. I mean, the Cardinals went in and swept them, but you know, they were doing fine up until then. But they're not going to do much this year.
No, I'm sorry,
Mark. I mean, they're one of the worst teams of baseball. The Rockies are the worst team of baseball. They're 18-62. The White Sox are 26-55. They won yesterday, but they're not going to be doing a lot of winning. That's a team that's way far away from where they need to be. They've put themselves in a hole. They're sort of developing at the moment.
Didn't they have a white or a Pope Leo night or something like that where they honored him? And
well, it was at the ballpark, but was it during a game? It was a different.
It was
an event when they were out of town, wasn't it?
And he appeared, virtually and gave an address. Now let's not forget Pope Leo's father was a Cardinals fan.
That's true.
Let's not forget that.
And his older brother is a Trump fan.
And his mom
lives in Florida.
His mom was is that right?
Pope Leo's not a Trump fan, though.
His mom was a Cubs fan. So they got a little bit of that in there, too.
Well, they're in Chicago. They got two teams up there. Yeah. That's okay. That's all right. Yeah. So, I'm going to bring up the NBA, and not just because the MVP was a Kentucky graduate. That's not why I'm bringing that up. I want to play some soundbite from last night's NBA outing where they had the draft last night, right? They had the draft in the NBA. This is one of the things that happened last night.
With the ninth pick in the 2025 NBA draft, the Toronto Raptors select Colin Murray Boyles from the University of South Carolina.
Colin Murray Boyles sharing this moment with his mom, Yvonne, his dad, Sean.
I wish.
His brother, James.
I wish this was TV sometimes, just so you could see that video and not just hear the audio. I don't know anything about the Raptors, Tom, but I'm guessing they're a pretty miserable NBA franchise.
Well, they've had their moments. They've done some winning.
So clearly this Broyles kid did not want to go to the Raptors because the cameras are all on him and they announce that he's the winner and he stands up and he clearly drops the F-bomb. Oh. Like, mom, you can just hear him grunt it out. And you couldn't pick it up on camera, but you could read his lips very clearly. He was very clearly pissed off that he's going to the Raptors.
Just be happy you were drafted.
The video's going to go viral on the internet this morning because you can clearly tell that's not where he wanted to go play basketball.
What pick was he? What number?
Ninth.
Nine.
Yeah. I mean, you, like the Mavericks, which is where Cooper Flagg went. I mean, typically it works where the team that was the worst they're going to get the best
the
player.
Pick,
like
right?
a Caitlin
yeah.
Clark, yeah. right? She right. went to the Fever. Yeah. So that's to be expected that you're probably not going to be in love with, if you're a top pick, right? You're not going to be in love with the team you're going to?
Yeah, you have to know about where you're going to be picked and who might be able to take you. And the teams will tell you, you know, that they're interested in you. There's a big difference between the NBA and college basketball, I guess, in that respect, where, you know, these obviously the players who are heading into college, whether you're a high school player, you get to pick where you're going to go. You know,
yeah.
these teams recruit
yeah.
you and then you pick. Or now players are just jumping into the portal and they decide, I want to go there.
Well,
I
his agent.
Transfer there.
Surely.
So they just kind of move around freely. And in the NBA, you get locked into a contract. That's the other side of it, though, is you're making millions. I mean, these guys are getting paid a
top
ton
10
of money.
Draft pick. He's going to make plenty, right?
Yeah, let
guaranteed
me take my
money.
Tiny violin out for him.
I don't feel sad for him. But they all have agents. His agent
right.
should have said, here's what's going to happen. Whoever picks you, just smile. You don't have to do anything else, and that is not what this kid did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how bad it is. You still get to go to all those other cities and travel around
exactly.
and live in luxury and play yep. in every building and... You know, eventually you're not going to play for the Raptors the rest of your life. I mean, at some point you'll play for somebody else. I don't know.
Highest average salary in professional sports, isn't it? NBA.
They're phenomenal players.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I wouldn't argue. Well, yeah, and it's just, you know, a smaller team. So.
You're right, smaller.
But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. If I lived in an NBA city, I'd probably think higher of the NBA because you'd get to see the players in person all the time, and they are phenomenal
right.
at what they do. I just prefer college. I like the atmosphere of college games better, but there's no denying these guys are incredible at what they do. Best
just wait till Kentucky and Indiana are doing those home
baby.
Games again, baby.
We're playing you this year. Let's
you don't
go.
Think St. That's Louis right. would ever get an NBA team, do you?
I think it's possible down the road, yes. I think Tatum, Beal, some of these guys.
Oh, they got the cash,
you know,
to do it.
Down the road, yeah. have a desire. They might be able to talk some people into it, but I think we're years away from that.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, we are a sports team.
Yeah, I got to go do sports.
We're a sports city, I meant to say.
We're a great sports city.
Yes, we are.
We've proven that time and again.
We are.
All right. See you, Tom.
See you, Tom.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Don't forget your coffee.
Yeah, you'll need that. You'll need that for sure. Yeah. All right. Yeah. We had an NBA team at one point.
Did we?
American Basketball Association many years ago.
What was the name?
Who was it, Ethan?
We had the Spirits of St. Louis for a while, but then we had the St. Louis Hawks who moved to Atlanta.
Was that before I was born or when I was very
Cliff
young?
Cliff Hagan was part of that team. In fact, I had him on a channel 4 years ago. He was a big Kentucky player, and he was on one of those teams.
You know how we talk about on the show where a lot of our conversations somehow get shifted back to food? That's how it is with you in Kentucky.
Well,
somehow it's like...
If it's basketball, it's probably going to gravitate toward that.
But it goes to Kentucky. Did you know his great 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 grandfather
went to
Kentucky?
Did you know that?
Did you know that?
Just played basketball in Kentucky. Yeah, it's a badge of honor for these people and me, of course. Is it really? All right, coming up, we'll get to another news in just a couple of minutes. Top of the hour, we are expecting a news conference from Pete Hegseth and I don't know who else, maybe some of the top generals at the Department of Defense talking about the real damage done in Iran, and we're going to carry that live for you coming up here at 7 a.m. or whenever it starts. So stick around for that. We'll be back. What I'm about to tell you does not apply to me in any way, shape, or form. Now, if my wife is listening, she's going to spit coffee out of her nose when I read this. Americans spend 49 hours a year on their phones on the toilet.
Sounds about right.
That does sound right.
49 hours,
but on average. But here's the kicker. Only 25% of them wipe their phones down afterwards, setting the stage for a hygiene hazard, according to one study.
Okay, but like, who wipes their phone down like that?
I don't know. Ethan, you got to tell me. I don't know if this is a guy thing or not. Has your wife ever accused you of spending too long in the bathroom?
No.
Mine has. Why does it take you so? I'm like, that's my business. You don't need to be in my business.
Guy's social hour.
It's not. But if you are in there and you've got your phone with you, you're going to scroll through it. Now, here's the thing. Gen Z leads the pack, according to this study, at 54 hours a year, with 66% scrolling social media, 40% streaming videos, 37% responding to messages, and even 2% taking video calls
from the bathroom. That's weird.
I know.
Remember when people used to just read the back of like a shampoo bottle, and now it's like...
Yeah.
Won't your legs go numb sitting there for that long?
Yeah, men, don't your legs go numb sitting there that long? I don't get it.
No comment.
All right, I don't have a pet, but I know Mark, Sue, Ethan, all of you guys have dogs you love very much. I've had dogs growing up. I love them. Well, there's this TikTok trend called Soulmated So Hard, and it's basically just trying to draw attention to how these pets become really our family. They're the most trusted, treasured companions, they say. So when they die, obviously, you're never quite the same. And so this Soulmated So Hard trend has been popping up on TikTok, where people are posting these video tributes, and they're making them very elaborate. But anyway, it's like this thing where you have to, you know, make this formal video to make sure that you pay tribute to that pet. I guess it's not enough just to post one single picture anymore. You need to make the video tribute. So just a heads up.
I was always interested in the people that had their dearly departed pets stuffed.
Oh, that's weird.
Oh, that is weird.
I've been
like,
to
take
a house
it to
where
a taxidermist it and then you
like
can
that.
Always have it there.
I remember doing a story, I think it was Channel 4 maybe, I don't know, and it was clearly a stuffed dog, very real looking, so I think it was the dog.
The dog?
In like a basket. And I'm thinking, this is just weird.
In
like
a basket?
Like almost, as if it was like the dog's bed.
I gotcha.
It's okay. Very odd.
No, thank you.
I have told my wife she needs to stuff me when I die and put me on the couch. So.
Do you have like, a pose you want to be
I just want to sit on the couch. That way if she's dating somebody else, then I'm just sitting there looking.
Your finger pointed.
That's sick.
Oh my gosh.
That's sick. All right.
Thank you.
So here's a fun story and one that was a big surprise. So a Texas woman is celebrating because a professional diver recovered her diamond wedding ring at the bottom of a lake in Texas. It's called Possum Kingdom Lake. Here's the thing. She lost it 100 years ago. Jacqueline Page says she was visiting the sandy beach with her son's baseball team when she noticed the ring, which dates back to 1910, had slipped off her finger. So she didn't lose it 100 years ago, but the ring dates back to 1910.
Okay, and
then a professional diver found the ring, believe it or not, after having to call off the dive initially because of bad weather, was able to go to the bottom of the lake and find the ring.
Needle in a haystack.
Isn't that amazing?
That is impressive.
Yeah.
Sue, I think you can probably relate to this. We've all been worried about plastics, and I think a lot of people have been trying to switch to bottles. Like, I know some people don't even use plastic baby bottles anymore. They use the glass ones, which scares me if you drop it on accident. But anyway, if you're worried about ingesting these microplastics, and maybe you did switch to glass bottles, they're saying you should check the type of cap that they have, because some new study revealed that those glass containers often have more microplastics in them than the others, and they think that the caps... are the reason why. They conducted this research to investigate the level of microplastic contamination in water, soft drinks, beer, and wine, and they found that the glass bottles were somehow, which this makes no sense to me, were the most contaminated with these microplastics.
Yuck.
Help my brain understand that.
Yeah, because you think of them being rinsed and clean and all. Right. Like, what about beer bottles? Of course, they have metal caps on. We wouldn't have to worry about that, right?
But it's a tiny little cap compared to an entire plastic bottle.
Hmm.
Right.
I hadn't thought about that.
I don't understand that.
All right, so we've seen the self-driving cars. There is a motorcycle company, Kawasaki, I know you've heard of them, who they're coming out with a four-legged all-terrain vehicle that functions like a horse.
Huh.
Like it can almost walk. I'm trying to envision it because they have a video of it here, but I'm not sure how you would ride it. I see somebody on it. It walks like a horse, except it's I assume it has an engine in. It's hydrogen fueled, so that's water. You just pour water in it, right?
Yeah, what's the advantage?
I don't know.
Like, why
is
you just ride a
necessary?
Horse?
I don't know. Why you wouldn't just ride a horse?
That's weird. Hey, a real
Save
quick
a
one. There was a study that came out that found that Illinois and Missouri are the two of the hardest state names to pronounce. Illinois ranked as the fourth hardest to pronounce state. Missouri as the eighth hardest to pronounce state.
Why?
How?
Some people mispronounce it Missouri.
Missouri.
But
Illinois.
I guess Illinois?
No.
Who doesn't know Illinois or Missouri? It's
What's
not Missouri.
The number one? Do you know?
I don't know the number one.
I'm guessing it's Massachusetts.
Probably Massachusetts. Yeah, but if I had to guess, it's probably it. All right.
Arkansas. Sorry.
Stick around. All right. A busy Thursday morning here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. Just finished carrying most of a live news conference there with Pete Hegseth and General Kane at the Pentagon talking about the after effects of the bombing in Iran and the media trying desperately to protect Iran and claim that not enough damage was done by 30,000 pound massive ordnance penetrators. Yeah, you can go sell that somewhere else. So Pete Hegseth wasn't having any of it, and we're going to continue talking about that this hour. Kim St. Ange and Ethan Bryden here with me. We'll get to Sue Thomas in a minute, but we're going to get Shannon Bream on. Couldn't have a better person coming up to discuss this from the as a news anchor and watching this from the Fox News desk, I'm sure, this morning there in Washington. And, of course, Griff Jenkins will be along a little bit later in the hour as well. Kim, your thoughts after watching that news conference?
Yeah, you know, I think that Hegseth and General Kane were just very adamant that this attack did exactly what it was intended to do. And they emphasized the fact that, look, what's come out so far with this preliminary report is just that. It's preliminary. And over the next number of days, they'll be having to work to determine, I guess, the severity of the attack, because like you said earlier, Mark, it's not as simple as, hey, you know what, let's just send someone to actually walk over to the site and go ahead and check it out.
Yeah, we're gonna drop some paratroopers in and check that out, and we'll get back with you tomorrow.
Be fine.
That's not quite how that works, is it? No, we know that. All right, it's also a big day for the Supreme Court. In less than an hour, so at 9 a.m. Our time, 10 a.m. Central, or 10 a.m. Eastern, I should say, 9 a.m. our time, the Supreme Court will drop its next round of decisions. And they've got to drop a bunch of them because they've got today and tomorrow, and then this session is over with for the United States Supreme Court, I believe. Shannon Bream can talk about that a little bit when we get her in here in the next segment, so stay tuned for that. Right now, I want to get to our top stories, though.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
We think we hit them so hard and so fast they didn't get to move. And if you knew about that material, it's very hard and very dangerous to move.
Yeah, that was the president yesterday saying that all these reports that, you know, Iran was able to load all of its yellow cake processed uranium onto a truck and drive it out of there. Who was driving it? Because that guy's probably glowing bright green this morning.
The DIA themselves have now come out and said this was a preliminary report and this CNN story got it completely wrong. But that reporter is a sheep and she's a mouthpiece for people who don't like Donald Trump.
One of the ones that led the reporting on the fake steel dossier before she worked for CNN. Then CNN hired her because they were apparently so proud of her crappy work.
Asking questions is literally our job. Demanding facts and answers instead of just taking a president's word for it.
That's Jake Tapper. That's Jake Tapper saying, defending that the media is there to ask questions instead of just taking the president's word for it. After ignoring the mental decline of Joe Biden that was obvious to anyone for four straight years, now he wants you to believe the media is there to ask serious questions.
We all remember Jordan, right? If you were a Chicago Bulls fan, you knew that he was the GOAT. And he was the great. Every time he went out, he punished everyone. President Trump is the new Michael Jordan of government.
Oh, man. I got to get me some goat shoes, don't you think? Instead of Jordans, I'm going to get some Trumps.
I'm surprised Trump doesn't wear something that says goat.
Like bright gold tennis shoes or something?
Wasn't he selling? He had watches. What has Trump not sold? Bibles, watches. He needs to get something that says goat on it and sell that.
To his credit, I think it's the family enterprise that's selling that and not directly him. But still, it's got the Trump organization's name on it. You need to get you a gold phone and some gold shoes.
It'd be like a gold tooth, and each tooth has GOAT on it.
I just want to get a T-shirt with one of these massive ordnance penetrators on it. That's what I want to walk around with, a T-shirt that says MOP on the front of it.
I'd like to see the reaction from some of the liberals as you walk around. Yeah. But Mark, you know, you of all people, you are not afraid at all to wear a T-shirt that people would look at as, like, that's controversial, that's offensive.
You are correct.
You do not care, which I respect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thank you for that. So here's the bite of the day from the news conference. In case you missed the whole thing earlier, this is the bite of the day. So the reporter she's going to ask a gotcha question to Pete Hegseth, because remember he said the boys in the planes are on their way back. They did a great job. Well, they found out there was a female pilot, and that was not good enough for the media. So they decided they're going to go after Hegseth for being a sexist, for daring to say that. And Pete did not play very well with this young lady today. Here you go.
Acknowledge the female pilots that also participated in this mission. The early messages that you sent out only congratulated the boys.
So when I say something like our boys in bombers, see, this is the kind of thing the press does, right? Of course, the chairman mentioned a female bomber pilot. That's fantastic. She's fantastic. She's a hero. I want more female bomber pilots. I hope the men and women of our country sign up to do such brave and audacious things. But when you spin it as, because I say our boys and bombers is a common phrase, I'll keep saying things like that, whether they're men or women. Very proud of that female pilot, just like I'm very proud of those male pilots. And I don't care if it's a male or a female in that cockpit, and the American people don't care. But it's the obsession with race and gender in this department that's changed priorities. We don't do that anymore. We don't play your little games.
And the point is, I don't care if it's a male or a female pilot, but it's not going to be a male who thinks he's a female or a female that thinks he's a male. So there will be clear gender distinctions, but Pete Hegseth doesn't care which one of those chromosome-carrying people are flying the airplane.
You know, it's so funny because a number of our listeners who are tuning in on Facebook, by the way, thank you for doing that. They're commenting, you know, they want the female pilot recognized, but men and women sports, that's just different. So they get to pick and choose when it matters and what a woman is. You know what I mean? That's what's really funny about it, too.
Well, and they're going to keep doing that. But I do have to say that if you've watched Hegseth today, you start to understand. Like, the first time, remember back to the first time you watched J.D. Vance after Donald Trump named him as his vice president. And at first you might, like me, have wondered why he picked Vance over somebody else. And then it dawned on you. Because once you heard Vance slice and dice a couple of network reporters over their nonsense, you started to realize what Donald Trump saw in him. He saw leadership and an intelligence and an ability to think on his feet and to answer questions. What you saw at the Pentagon today was the same thing. It's what he saw in Pete Hegseth, a longtime veteran of foreign wars who's now leading the Pentagon with common sense and no nonsense. Not politically correct. And that's exactly why Donald Trump named him to that position. And the media has tried to take him out because of that little texting problem that they all tried to blow out of proportion. And then this thing went off seamlessly So you understand now as you watch it. All right, quick break here because we have Shannon Bream from Fox News Sunday coming up. Stay tuned. Well, Shannon, welcome back. Of course, you know where I had to start this morning, right?
Exactly, where a lot of folks started their morning, which was this briefing out of the Pentagon.
Well, I mean, anything surprising out of that to you? I mean, I think it was interesting to hear General Kane describe just how technically accurate these weapons were and that they knew what they were facing. And I felt like I was watching, you know, Maverick Top Gun because they had to hit the ventilator shaft. And I mean, it was a pretty amazing description.
It was. And what Chairman Kane has been so good at, I think, is humanizing this as well, talking about the young women and men behind these operations and exactly what they were facing and how they stepped up and did incredible things. And I think you're right. From the minute we started talking about this on Saturday night, I was like, I've seen this movie. You know, we all have a feeling, if you've seen Top Gun Maverick, that you know just how difficult this is. Obviously, that's a different situation. But the precision, the training, all the things that are happening for years that we don't know about that goes into. So when these missions come available, the opportunity, the window is there. Our men and women are ready to go.
How do you feel? I just want to ask you a personal question here. I'm sure you know Jennifer Griffin. She's worked for Fox for years. Hegseth made a pretty pointed attack on her today, saying that she was one of the worst. I don't know where that came from. How does it make you feel when you hear things like that?
You know, it's a little tricky because obviously we've all been colleagues. And so we do have a relationship of having work together essentially on the same team.
Right.
I think they're both very independent voices. And I think that they're both going to go with the information that they believe is correct and right and true according to their sources. They have different sources, maybe some of the same sources. So it's just one of those things that, like, you know, essentially we've been in the same family, and I think that there's affection there, but clearly there's some frustration there too.
Yeah, you pick up on that for sure.
Shannon, in about, what is it, like 40 minutes or so, we're expecting the Supreme Court to release more decisions. And I mean, we're in crunch time now. What are you keeping a close eye on today?
So I think the biggest one that we are awaiting is nationwide injunctions. Can a single federal judge anywhere, we know there are about 700 of them across the country, shut down a law, an executive order, a policy for the entire country? It's the biggest case of the term. They added these May 15th arguments. They never argue a case in May. That's the really big one. But we've also got cases that deal with, you know, funding for Planned Parenthood through government funding of Medicaid. We've got this case that's in our area here in the D.C. area that could ripple far beyond it, which is, can parents opt their kids out of lessons with books that they find objectionable to their religious faith if they're in public school? So we've got 10 left. We'll see what we get today, and we'll see if they finish up on time tomorrow. I'm not sure.
Yeah, the big one, I guess, last week was the decision on trans surgeries in Tennessee, correct? Because that's going to have an impact here in Missouri.
The thing is, there are more than two dozen states that have very similar laws that will now have, you know, essentially the blessing of the Supreme Court if they pretty closely mirror what was done in Tennessee. And we were a little surprised to get that last week because normally we think it's, you know, one of the biggest ones. It's going to be last week. But they did surprise us a little bit with that 6-3 ruling. And some people would argue it was sort of a 6.5, 2.5, because Justice Kagan wasn't fully with the dissent, but she was, you know, with a good chunk of the dissent. But essentially, you know, what the Chief Justice said is, listen, this law passes the constitutional muster test. And because of that, we leave this to the states, the people, their elected representatives, to work out issues like this one.
Going back to the what you mentioned about funding, I think it was for Planned Parenthood and maybe as it relates to Medicaid, that's in the Big Beautiful Bill, right? So how would that be different? Because I thought the Big Beautiful Bill basically would pull funding from Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, and you know, they've tried to do this so many times in so many different ways, the GOP has. So we'll see what survives the so-called parliamentarian review in the Senate, what survives in the bill, what gets back to the House. You know, we're just not sure exactly what will end up in the final thing that gets to the president's desk. This case comes out of South Carolina, where the governor has issued an executive order twice saying that, you know, Medicaid funding can't flow to Planned Parenthood because there's a chance that money's fungible, that it could flow to abortion, which is against federal policy and federal law in almost every case. There are some exceptions. So a lot of states are watching this to see, because if South Carolina wins the right to do this, to say, listen, Medicaid can go to all these other clinics and family planning and all these different things, but if there's an abortion there, then the governor has the right to block the funding. It'll be really interesting to see what the ripple effect is if the court makes that decision.
Yeah, and now there's less than a week till they've got to pass this, right? I mean, I know it's not a hard deadline, but the president wants them to stay in Washington until they get this done. Do you think that's realistic?
Senator Thune, the Senate Majority Leader, told me last week that he would keep them here.
Oh?
And so he's like, if the Senate is still running up against this holiday situation, I'm going to keep them here. So they are all very much on notice that that could be their weekend. The House seems to think they'd have a little bit of time, but the Speaker says, I'll bring them back next week on a holiday week. If the Senate gets its work done, we'll be here to pick up wherever they drop this bill in our lap.
So is your big guest this week going to be Zohran Mandani?
You know what? Don't laugh. We asked for him.
Well, sure.
I would like that interview.
We went down to him and I said, listen, is this the future of the Democrat Party? The establishment here in D.C. seems a little rattled that they don't really want this to be kind of their spokesperson for the future. But we asked because I got a lot of questions for him. So they haven't said no. They haven't said yes, but we'll see.
Well, you know, Curtis Sliwa has run for that office several times. And I mean, if he ever had a chance, this might be the year.
Yeah. And apparently his team has got some polling that they believe there's a lane for him.
Okay.
If these other folks are in and kind of dice and slice the other votes that are available.
Yeah.
So stranger things have happened.
That's for sure. Do you have anybody else confirmed you want to talk about for Sunday?
We do. We actually have two senators from across the aisle who've agreed to come on together, Senators Coons and Curtis. They want to talk about the places that they do have some bipartisanship, but of course we'll push them on Big Beautiful Bill and war powers and all these other things where they may not agree, but we're always thankful when folks agree to come on and have a bipartisan conversation together.
Yeah. Shannon, don't have too hard of a day with the Supreme Court stuff. I know you'll have your hands full in a few minutes.
I've frozen a couple of bottles of water to take out there with me. Not my first rodeo. So 95 degrees, we are prepared for you.
We will be watching, Shannon. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, take care. Shannon Bream, she'll be live in front of the United States Supreme Court in that heat in the next 30 minutes, waiting for those decisions to come down. So stay tuned, because the Brian Kilmeade Show, of course, follows us, and he'll have the very latest on that. Maybe another report from Shannon. We'll be back with Griff Jenkins after this. Griff Jenkins! nothing like a good breaking news day, huh, Griff?
Man, Mark and Kim, good morning. Listen, there's so much breaking news, I don't even know where I am. It's like Griff Jenkins reporting from, I don't, where am I, guys? Where am I?
What day is it?
What day is it? It's unbelievable. But, you know, you played that clip from that Pentagon press conference, and obviously there was a moment that's making the media headlines where Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, attacked Jen Griffin, our Pentagon correspondent.
Yes.
And that's getting a headline. But I think the thing that was really unique is someone that covers this a lot and has been covering, obviously we're old enough to remember, you know, the Iran history and threat going back 4.5 decades. But I thought the moment that Dan Raisin Kane went into detail talking about the CIA guy that been sitting on the Fordo target for 15 years and walking us through it was one of the most remarkable things I've ever heard. It's not getting the headline, I think, but my jaw dropped, because we typically don't get that amount of detail. And as a guy that, you know, has spent his entire career with a former Marine that dealt with a lot of national security named Ollie North,
yeah,
when he dropped and began to talk about the DITRA, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, they don't talk about that group very often because they're secret. And he really gave, I mean, you know, setting aside some of the you know, pushback and condemnation that Hegseth gave the media, really Kane's remarks are I think you're going to hear more and more former military people, talking heads out there that are, you know, were in the military, are gonna highlight that and say, holy smokes, I can't believe we got that.
Yeah, well, you heard him say to that one reporter, said, when can we see more of this? And Hegseth said, do you have a top secret security
yeah,
clearance, sir?
Yeah.
And then just shut him down, because you're not going to see some of it. Some of it you can't. Yep. Some of it you can't prove. And here's what we said earlier. I hate to keep going back to it, but the what they described almost sounded like that scene out of Top Gun Maverick, where they're trying to get the missiles down the right down the ventilation shaft, so the first run blows the cover off of it, and the second run the missiles shoot straight down into the Death Star and blow up the underground nuclear facility. That's sort of what it sounded like.
A- Absolutely. And, you know, I was anchoring Fox and Friends this weekend with my colleague Joey Jones, and he brought that up a couple of times. People on Twitter were like, you're trivializing it like Top Gun. No, it's totally like that run. If people remember that scene. And what's remarkable is, you know, as much as I love Tom Cruise, because I think he's the last living great action hero on the big screen, you know, that was a movie. And this was real life. And they'd never done this. And you know, to have obviously they've been practicing this. Obviously this wasn't something they came up with last minute. But to pull it off to the degree of flawlessness that they did is really going to be a major historical footnote of military greatness and why we are, you know, unparalleled in terms of the greatest military on the planet. I also thought, by the way, if I could just add, the other part that was amazing was these young 44 soldiers that defended with a Patriot battery the missiles that Iran sent to Al Udeid Air Base in Doha, Qatar, and not a single one got through. These are 20-something-year-olds literally standing between Iranian missiles and what could have been a disastrous attack on our base.
And you probably saw the video of from that base of the soldiers cheering as those things were blowing up in the air. It looked like a fireworks display, and I couldn't run into the audio because they were dropping so many F-bombs in the background. So
yeah, exactly. But I mean, remarkable stuff. And yeah. Really, you know, I'll say this about the criticism of, in full disclosure, my former colleague and friend Pete Hegseth, and that is, you know, whatever he does in his tenure, the fact that all of the recruitment numbers are soaring off the charts is going to be one of his greatest accomplishments. Because at the end of the day, we hire young men and women to go into combat, fearlessly defend the nation, and pull triggers.
Yep.
And that run was among the best of the best. In terms of execution.
Yeah, I saw one of our listeners the other day saying, I heard there'd be a draft, and I'm thinking, no way would there be a need for a draft when you have such high enrollment. People are choosing to be in the military at a rate that we haven't seen in many, many years. Griff, I wanted to ask you about something that you're covering today, and that's all these Iranian nationals who have been arrested here in the United States, and it's across the country. There was actually a map that Fox put up yesterday, and I saw both Missouri and Illinois as states where some of these Iranians have been arrested. Do we have any details on that?
Well, they're all across the country. I mean, we were reporting on, you know, a dozen or so that have been rounded up, and then boom, it escalated quickly. We got information yesterday that ICE has arrested 130 Iranian nationals across the U.S. in the last 7 days, and that ICE currently has 670 Iranians in ICE detention. It comes after the heels of, we knew that there was roughly more than 1,500 Iranians came into the country under the Biden administration, of which 700 and something were released. And so obviously they are making a lot of headway towards rounding them up, because look, the potential for an Iranian sleeper cell in the U.S. has gone to a highly serious level, with the, you know, DHS putting out that National Terrorism Advisory System saying we're in a heightened threat environment right now. And so, you know, listen, my hat's off to them. I will say this, though, I can't talk about this and not mention that the former Border Patrol chief, Jason Owens, that I spent a lot of time with during the Biden border crisis, mm-hmm. I asked him time and time again, what keeps you up at night? And the answer was always the same. It was that among the gotaways would be a terrorist that would carry out an attack, because they've only got to be right once.
These Iranians, so, they're not people who have committed crimes before, right? It's just the fact that they're from Iran. That's enough at this point, right? I mean, they're here illegally.
Well, well, in some cases, we reported on an Iranian national in Mississippi that is a KST, a known or suspected terrorist. He's listed as that. We know another individual was an Iranian army sniper, and even a third one had admitted ties to Hezbollah. So, you know, listen, out of the 670 they've got in custody, if three were terrorists, that certainly should give you pause.
Yeah, true. And I think that's a key fact, is that the previous administration let some of these people loose into the interior of this country. It's frightening stuff. I tell you what, Griff, we appreciate your time, my friend. Have a great day up there in D.C.
Thanks, guys. And by the way, keep your eye on the Supreme Court. We may get some interesting decisions today. That's going to be a big story.
That is exactly the truth. We appreciate you. Thank you. And I know Shannon Bream is going to be out there reporting live from SCOTUS coming up here at the top of the hour. The Brian Kilmeade Show will have the very latest on that for you. Well, she did it again. Operation Let Her Speak, Kim. Jasmine Crockett, in a House hearing, has decided to attack First Lady Melania Trump.
I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah, I'm going to play the sound for you when we come back. Stay tuned. All right, great to get Griff on here talking about all this, and he's bringing up these issues that are important right now, right? Part of what they're talking about is ICE and how they vet people at the border. That's how the known suspected terrorists got in here, and they're tracking them down, and I feel confident that they're going to do the best job they can. But let's face it, there are millions of people in this country who were allowed in by the previous administration, and we don't know who they are. And that's really the issue here. The issue with illegal immigration is not a broken, and we don't have a broken immigration system. We don't. Our immigration system works when you follow the rules. If you want to come in, you go apply in your country. You get on a waiting list. It may take you. I have a friend who came here from Russia. They applied, and 7 years later, out of the blue, they were contacted and said they had been approved.
Wow.
And they dropped everything and moved to the United States. They lived in Russia. And that was years ago. But there's a proper way to do it, and there's an illegal way to do it. We don't have a broken system. We have people who've broken the rules, and we have one political party that doesn't care because they see political benefit out of it, right? Through getting people in here illegally, counting them in the census, and getting extra seats in Congress, which gives you extra electoral votes and tries to help you win more presidential elections. That's what Joe Biden was all about, and he might not even have been fully aware of it. But the people controlling him and the auto pen were most certainly aware of it, right? So the point of that diatribe that it just gave you is that it's not – the problem is the people coming here illegally. It's not visa overstays, although that's a small part of the problem. We've had a few problems with people that came here and stayed beyond their visa. It's our fault for not – setting an alarm and remembering when their visa expired and reminding them they had to leave the country. That's on us. Now Jasmine Crockett, in a hearing, attacks Melania Trump because she came here on a visa and she didn't come here illegally. She's mad at the kind of visa she got when she was brought into this country. Listen to the brain surgeon Jasmine Crockett criticize Melania Trump's intelligence. Listen.
And since we're talking about integrity, I'm confused as to why my Republican colleagues aren't talking about the lack of integrity when it comes to the president's family's visas. Let me remind y'all that Melania, the first lady, a model. And when I say model, I'm not talking about Tyra Banks, Cindy Crawford, or Naomi Campbell level, applied for and was given an EB1 visa. And what's that stands for is an Einstein visa. Now, y'all that don't know, let me tell you how you receive an Einstein visa. You're supposed to have some sort of significant achievement, like being awarded a Nobel Peace Prize or a Pulitzer, being an Olympic medalist, or having other sustained extraordinary abilities and success in sciences, arts, education, business, or athletics. Last time I checked, the First Lady had none of those accolades under her belt. It doesn't take an Einstein to see that the math ain't mathin' here.
I wonder, other than hood, what other language does Jasmine Crockett speak? Because Melania Trump speaks five languages.
Mm-hmm.
Very well, very fluent in five languages. She's brilliant, number one. Number two, that's not all an EB1 visa does. She way oversimplified what an EB1 visa is. Big companies use them all the time to bring workers here.
Mm-hmm.
She completely misrepresented what an EB-1 visa. You don't have to be a Nobel Prize winner to get an EB-1 visa.
I would think, you know, leading up to Trump's first term, that Melania Trump, her status, her legal status, would have been highly scrutinized and nitpicked with a fine-tooth comb. And clearly, everything was fine.
Yes. Well, I'm sure it was fine. But again, to ignore the problems. Remember, Jasmine Crockett's mad because they're arresting people in their places of work and other places. You go where they are, right? You if you're going to go fishing, you don't fish in the middle of a field. You go to a pond. You go where they are. If you're looking for an illegal alien and you know where they work, that's where you go to get them. The left doesn't want you to get them in any way, shape, or form. They'd rather complain about the ones like Melania Trump, who are legal citizens in this country now, but who legally immigrated here. That complete distraction by the left. And it gets back to the fact that we need to let them speak. These folks are about to try to elect a committed socialist who wants to redistribute wealth in the financial capital of the United States in New York City. If that happens, that country, that city is going to go to hell in a handbasket. It's going to be like a third world country. People are going to be fleeing to get the hell out of there. Maybe they'll move Wall Street to Florida. What do you think?
Wouldn't that be something?
Wouldn't that be something? That would be fantastic. All right. So we've covered a lot this morning. There was that news conference earlier. Be sure you can go back and listen to our coverage of that. We started carrying it live at 7 o'clock. And also, we have the Supreme Court decisions coming up. There are some big ones regarding these injunctions that have been laid down against the president by every district judge in America who thinks they're smarter than the president of the United States. They're about to release this Garcia guy. There's a Biden appointee is about to release this guy, even though he's accused of human trafficking. They're going to release him on his own recognizance. And you want to know one of the requirements when he's released? He can have no contact with any of his MS-13 gang associates. So they're admitting in the court documents that he's an MS-13 gang member, and they're still going to release him back into the community. That's never going to happen. ICE is going to pick him up the minute he steps out of that courtroom and ship him back out of the country.
I thought they were keeping him detained because they knew once he was released, he would be deported. Which bothers me, because you know what that means? That we, the taxpayers, are basically paying for that prison sentence, but prison stay.
Very true. Keep it tuned right here to 971talk.com because we are going to carry the Brian Kilmeade Show as soon as we're off the air here, and you'll have the very latest as these Supreme Court cases break. And of course, we'll talk about all of them tomorrow morning. We're going to have Congressman Eric Burleson on tomorrow on the Capitol beat about 7:35. So be sure and tune in for that for sure. Have a great day. Kim and Ethan and Sue and I will see you back here Friday morning at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.